It's 4 o'clock.
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm here. I'm Don Allen in Studio V. We have Mr. Ron Edwards. How you doing, Mr. Edwards?
Fine, Mr. Allen. Can't complain on a crisp day here in the Twin Cities. The temperature's around 6 degrees above zero or whatever. But, chilly day. We got some more snow. I mean, why are we not surprised? We got some more snow.
Yeah, more snow everywhere. I woke up this morning and saw that. I said, "Oh my goodness, more snow!"
Yeah. What can you say? But hey, got to tell you, Don, as we move quickly into the international portion of the program, I kind of rather be here than be in Tripoli, if you will. Things not very pleasant as it pertains to that part of the world. You know, it was just a couple weeks ago that. The experts, quote-unquote, were talking in terms that this was representing a significant transition of power and et cetera, and that it also represented a new era without violence. Because as you remember, in the case of Egypt, it was only about 300, though they didn't have those numbers when they were supposed to. But anyways, Libya, altogether different. It appears the country is divided. I'm talking about physically. Along geographical lines, apparently anti-Qaddafi forces have taken control in the east around Benghazi, if you will, Libya's second largest city. Some had predicted 6 days, 7 days ago that it would just be a hop and a skop, if you will, to topple Qaddafi, move into Tripoli, the capital, and take control. Well, it's not worked out that way. It appears, though, in the last 10 hours, the Libyan government has allowed Western correspondents into Tripoli.
Oh.
And Ben Wiederman, who is they're attempting certainly to make him the prize journalist who is allegedly getting the information, reported about 20 minutes ago that he was around different neighborhoods in the city of Tripoli. But he pointed out that he and other Western correspondents were being denied access outside of the common city limits of Tripoli, that roadblocks or checkpoints, as they call them, were denying them access. A lot of rumors, of course. People keep talking about the Middle East, Don. You and I had a discussion during the pre-preparation. People keep talking about the Middle East. You know, Libya, just like Egypt, is not the Middle East. It's Africa.
Yes.
It's Africa, the continent of Africa. And I noticed that there's been a lot of discussion, which is code word for black Africans, about the mercenaries that allegedly have been involved, have been in the fighting, involved in the fighting on the side of the pro-Qaddafi forces. Also, apparently, in the last couple hours, that the Western journalists are alleging that Qaddafi has opened the armories there in Tripoli and has armed civilian supporters loyal to him. Part of the communist, the old communist approach and mythology of using the citizens' committees and et cetera. No one can really verify this. In fact, people can't even verify the casualty count. They really don't know how many are dead. Now, we also, in preparation for the program, we've been listening to our shortwave radio links. Different kinds of takes and scenarios coming out of Morocco, Algeria, Chad, Niger, if you will. The Egyptian state radio kind of staying away from talking in terms of what's going on. European and, other, let me say it like this, Don, white nationals from all other countries being ferreted out of Libya, if you will. There have been some defections of Libyan military personnel. Western media makes a lot of that, but I think that they're in a state of shock right now as we speak about the casualty numbers, about the numbers of individuals that have been killed in the process of this conflict. Number, conservative number being put at 1,000. Radio Riyadh indicating something more than that, if you will. And, of course, Gaddafi has sounded the boogeyman theme, and that is that al-Qaeda and bin Laden are behind this, and that it's they're being masterminded by forces that want control of Libya's oil. Now, on that particular note, Don, as we talked in the production meeting earlier this morning, the price of gasoline, my friend, has just skyrocketed.
Yes, it has.
I wonder how that can happen when Libya provides maybe, I don't know, you know, 2 or 3% of oil to the United States. I talked with analysts this morning, again, in preparation. My analysts, experts operating off the West Coast are saying they're expecting by this time next week a conservative figure of $130 a barrel. Right here in the Twin Cities, gasoline has hit $3.50. This time last week we were talking was at $3.02, $2.98, $2.99. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This will rip the guts out of the economic or attempted economic recovery here in the United States. My prediction, the National Research Institute is now predicting $5 a gallon by Memorial Day.
Wow.
Possible $7 a gallon by Labor Day.
Whoa. That's a steep thing. But, you know, what are we going to do? We keep dabbling in international affairs, and it just seems to come back and hit the American people right in the shorts. You know?
Yes, it does. The other thing is individuals who had always been, quote-unquote, allies of the United States now all of a sudden are dictators, though Gaddafi and the United States have had a love-hate relationship since he came to power in 1979. But, you know, the United States has always looked the other way. They looked the other way with Mubarak. They looked the other way with the Persian Gulf Emirates, if you will, and et cetera. Bahrain, still a place of tension, though the king there has made some real smooth decisions. Saudi Arabia's king has made some very smooth decisions as it pertains to increasing wages, additional benefits. You know, what really brought this to a head in Libya, of all places, was the issue of price of food.
Yes, very simple.
And Gaddafi and his people weren't watching that, and it was all about bread. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Now, here's what we also need to analyze. The cost of produce is going to skyrocket in this country because it's going to be difficult for over-the-road truckers to be able to carry out their responsibilities, deliver goods and et cetera at a reasonable price. So you can get ready to see significant cost increases in the retail and wholesale facilities, if you will. Things like vegetables and et cetera, you know, Michelle Obama is on this whole thing of nutrition and et cetera. Well, you can get ready to go back to eating French fries and hamburgers because it ain't going to happen, man.
Yeah, no, not at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Things are going to skyrocket. So it's not a good sign, if you will, what's at play here. And the United States, and by the way, President Barack Obama, whatever it is he does isn't right. As far as the conservative media, Tea Party and others on the move. Now, and I assume we'll maybe touch on it, but I'm just saying to now, because the situation in Madison got a couple calls yesterday. If we were taking a look at that, I said we clearly were.
Yeah.
The demonstrators, the pro-labor demonstrators in Madison, Wisconsin, Don, are not going away, are they?
No, they're not. They're not going anywhere soon. So they're out in the streets.
And in significant numbers. By the way, everyone is telling the joke within the journalistic world, if you will. The prank, they say it was a prank. I think it was an excellent covert operation. Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin showed what kind of character he really was. And a blogger, one of our quote-unquote blogger friends out of Buffalo, New York, called him, said he was one of the Koch brothers. You know, those are the big conservative bankrollers.
Yes.
Had Clarence Thomas, by the way. Now it's coming out that last year they had Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice, in Palm Springs, out there in California, where all the many of the strong conservative ties are, and gave Clarence his marching orders with respect to some things that he was supposed to do and some decisions that he was involved in, including putting corporate America into the political funding game. You know, we talked about that months ago. But yeah. Anyways, this blogger in Buffalo really pulled a fast one on Governor Walker. And, you know, Governor Walker, and it's interesting, and we need to keep this in mind, Don, here on Point. It was interesting that when the individual pretending to be one of the Koch brothers asked him about putting agent provocateurs into the crowd to create disturbances and possible bloodbath, you know, Governor Scott Walker was all in favor of that.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's really frightening. That's real frightening that this man who would, you know, of course, be at the head of law and order in America, in this conversation in which he thought was privileged and private, talked in terms of using covert forces and operational tactics to create violence in the streets of Madison, Wisconsin. And he talked pretty bad about the citizens of Madison, too, so I would assume that during the election he didn't carry Madison in Dane County. So anyways, that's what we've kind of got done. We've kind of intertwined the international to some of the local stuff going on. But for we here in America, in the tradition of, you know, God bless America, this gasoline thing is not good. It's not healthy for the recovery. And I'm one who says that the president really should have got on Air Force One last week and flown to Wisconsin and stood with those of organized labor. I just don't see that he would have lost anything.
Yeah. So it's another missed opportunity there from the White House, it looks like.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Let's throw the number out in case we have any calls. Yeah. Anybody wants to chit-chat with us or jump on us, if you will.
I was just getting ready to do that. You're listening to On Point, Black Talk Radio on Blog Talk Radio with your host Don Allen and Mr. Ron Edwards in Studio B, broadcasting live from downtown Minneapolis in the McIntosh Studios. The call-in number today is 877-572-4288. Again, that toll-free number is 877-572-4288. And Mr. Edwards, I would like our listeners locally here to know in the Twin Cities that there will be a Committee on Transportation Policy and Finance meeting on Monday, February 28th at 12:30 at the State Capitol.
Okay.
So for those that are of like minds and are tired of the dog and pony shows in North Minneapolis and you want some real answers, Committee Chair Representative Michael Beard will be on hand, and I'm sure you'll get some correct information, just the facts. So again, that Committee on Transportation and Policy Finance, I mean, you can ask them about the light rail, what's happening, get some updates, and get some real information. I'd like to thank the Committee Administrator of the Transportation Policy and Finance from the Minnesota House of Representatives, Mark Nisley, for sending me that email, and he will continue to keep me updated on these meetings that are coming up.
Now, he's a Republican?
Yes, yes. Yes.
Okay, you weren't able. I remember back in the spring and summer, well, right after we initiated this program, our inaugural month, we attempted to get information on that, and the Democratic leadership denied our request. Am I correct?
You are absolutely correct. I actually put telephone calls in to Representative Bobby Joe Champion's office and asked him the person who answered the phone a lot of questions and just asked for answers. And of course, you know. No answer, no response, because, you know, that celebrity status, and these people don't understand, especially some of these elected officials that, you know, we put you in there, we can take you out.
Okay.
You work for us. So
you mean by the ballot, not by the bullet.
Exactly, by the ballot.
Revolution, and it's the ballot. These are 10 times in America. Okay, go ahead.
And Ms. Eric, there was something that I wanted to touch base on last week and didn't get a chance to do that. But you remember the dog guest, the little dog that they were giving away last week
lot of news coverage here in Minneapolis and the Twin Cities. A lot of criticism. In fact, they made a kind of a stereotype cartoon of the African-American woman 39-year-old African-American woman who, you know, was trying to mail the little dog to her son in Georgia. I really don't know totally what her thinking was, but I was amazed at the race angle that the story took here, and then they took the dog away from her, which, you know, raises some serious questions in the minds of some of us. If the way that they took the dog away from her was legal, though I know that animal lovers will say that she had forfeited that right, but they did something I'd never seen before. They let cameras into the administrative hearing.
Yes.
They had administrative hearing here in Hennepin County, and she attempted to explain. She didn't have legal representation, and, of course, she did a poor job to the extent of trying to explain what she was trying to do. There was actually an overkill in many respects. Postal inspectors with their guns on were in the administrative hearing room. An inspector from the city's licensing bureau, and et cetera. And what they basically did was charge her for facilitating for the dog at our local animal shelter. And she was looking at a bill of about $1,000 by the time they had the hearing. And they told her, they gave her Monday, 2 weeks ago, to have that $1,000 in to pay for the upkeep of little guests, beautiful little dog. He's just as sweet as he could be. And they estimated that the additional cost would be as much as another $1,500 or $1,600, which, you know, by the way, I hate to say it. I don't want to put this young lady, you know, she was actually staying at a shelter in down in the Salvation Army area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was actually staying in a shelter. So there were some factors as it pertains to our her conditions and et cetera. We're not saying here on Point that what she did was right. I mean, the little doggy was not going to make it. I don't know what she was thinking about. But the key was she was trying to send this little dog, guest, to her 11-year-old son, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think you had raised the question on one of your blog sites about, with respect to all of this hand-wringing that was going on here, no one seemed to find it important that an 11-year-old black child didn't get a gift from his mother in which she sincerely thought she was doing the right thing. She didn't do it the right way, but she thought she was doing the right thing. And no one has talked about the 11-year-old child that didn't get a birthday gift.
Exactly. And Mr. Edwards, this is what I want to say. And this has a lot to do also with the media reporting, more specifically the Star and Tribune newspaper, who over a series of stories about an innocent dog, and obviously a woman named Stacy Champion, who might have been not too cognizant to understand what she was doing, to mail it, the dog, to the post.
In a box, correct. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But more importantly, where is Minnesota Nice? Where, at what point does someone look past this illness or whatever's going on and say, okay, there's a kid in Georgia, 11 years old, that's waiting for a dog? Wouldn't it be great if someone just called down there and say, hey, we got to get this kid a dog? Yeah, her mother, she made a mistake. Everybody.
His mother.
But I'm saying, you know, no one looked to that. So now we're going to give a dog to a unemployed South Minneapolis legal assistant. I'm not saying it's good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just saying, where's the piece from the Star and Tribune about the child, which is the most important piece?
Well, and you know, that brings us to another point, Mr. Allen, when we talk in terms of the importance of transparency here on Point. Now, for our domestic and international audience, Mr. Allen, my co-host here, was the feature of a rather interesting story about a contract, Mr. Allen, that you had received through all of the proper channels, by a reporter who is clear is on a vendetta against you. I have to tell you that after having been in the meeting with the reporter, his editor, and another senior writer, it's clear that this reporter, Corey Mitchell, who came here after apparently running into some problems with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Mr. Mitchell, who is an African-American, is the so-called education writer. I have to tell you, Mr. Allen, I have not spoken to you publicly on this, but I was actually taken back by the body language and the demeanor of Mr. Mitchell in that meeting Tuesday of last week.
Yes.
Where, you know, he made it clear he had been conducting. In fact, we now find out that he had been investigating you for about 9 weeks, ever since you almost got here.
Yeah.
And one of the things that just blew my mind was I'm aware of a conversation with the chair of the Minneapolis Board of Education, Ms. Jill Davis, who was quoted in the story in the paper the other day, but who gave that quote 5 weeks ago, not having all the facts with respect to how you received that contract and that you went through the proper process and et cetera. I mean, Ms. Allen, what was your take on this? Now, you know, we got a call last week from someone, and
yeah.
your response kind of was it was something you didn't necessarily want to talk about.
Yeah.
But now we're in a situation where it is, and I understand you're receiving thousands of hits on it. But were you surprised by the depth of the attack on you?
Yeah, well, Mr. Edwards, I have to look at it in like a four-tier situation. First of all, they say hindsight's always 20/20, and go back and follow your mind. So I got an opportunity to start with to talk to Minneapolis Public Schools board chair Jill Davis.
Okay.
Who I talked to her and said, hey, you know, I've done this work. The commercials are done. The ads are done. The ads that the Star and Tribune ran, let me mind you, unauthorized, they didn't have permission to run them. And so she said, just shook her head. She says, you know, this guy called me 5 weeks ago for a quote, and I didn't really get a chance to see the great work that you have done.
Okay, she used the word great work. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
And so I'm looking at her. I mean, she's telling me I have kids. I told her, Mr. Edwards, I just sat in the hall. I says, hey, I think that all kids should get an education in Minneapolis Public Schools. I have a blog. I have a bully pulpit. I use it. Okay, and so kids should get an education. It shouldn't be about the district headquarters. It shouldn't be about Chris Stewart. It shouldn't be about Star and Tribune. It should be about education and lifting it up. And I told her, I said, if you go on the Minnesota Department of Education website, and you look at the proficiency data, as when the kids go up, their proficiency goes down to almost nothing. I think that's what I've been a critic of, not necessarily the Minneapolis Public Schools, but what is happening to the point of the 70s to now. What transition took place? She agreed with me 100%.
Let me just say this and cut in for just a minute, okay. Mr. Allen, so that our listening audience also understand that both Mr. Allen and I, in different eras, although, are both graduates of the Minneapolis Public School System. So that no one gets disjointed that we may not know what we're talking about in terms of the history of this district. We're both graduates of the Minneapolis Public School System. In fact, I've shared with Mr. Allen in kind of private conversations that I've got to be a part of a group of individuals, and not one single school that I attended, grade school, junior high school, still exists in this city.
Wow. And Mr. Edwards, to continue, he even had the audacity to write an article and under the pictures that Prince did not attend North High School.
I was a little surprised on him.
Yeah,
now, for purpose of transparency, can you clarify? Was that a mistake on your part or what?
No, that was a mistake on their part. I was fully aware that Prince went to North High School because at the time I was a freshman at Bryant Junior High School, which is now Sabathany, which is right down the street from where Central was. And Prince was there. He got in some little whatever, you know, not going to class. So he had to go to North. But he lived in North, over North anyway. He went to North High. I'm just looking for this. I think it was 1973 and then another year he went there. But the fact of the matter remains, the Star and Tribune reporter, Mr. Corey Mitchell, said point blank that there were errors and that Prince did not go to North High.
Yes, yes. And he also pointed out there, and we need to clarify that also, in the we're talking about this. He indicated that you had made an egregious error in your reflections on a Nobel Peace Prize winner who had gone to Roosevelt. And after examining the information, it was clear to me that he intentionally twisted the fact because you were correct. And could you just give us an indication of clarify for us over the air what that was about?
Well, that was about, when I went in with this plan or this idea, this mock-up, there was graduates from Roosevelt that won the Nobel Peace Prize, and they won it as a group, be it if one or the other one went there. And in this case, one did, and one attended school in Massachusetts. That's fine. Okay, but they won this Nobel Peace Prize in chemistry as a group, and they got awarded it as both of them as a group.
And you pointed out that one of the recipients had attended and graduated from Roosevelt High School here in Minneapolis, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And so the point of the school district communications department was to show that, you know, Minneapolis Public Schools creates global citizens. We have a guy from Roosevelt High School that was an alumni that had an opportunity that actually won the Nobel Peace Prize. Who even hears about that these days? Nobody.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Mr. Mitchell is on this campaign to do whatever he's doing. And at this point, Mr. Edwards, I've contacted the publisher's office, a couple other folks, and I said, hey, we need to sit down because I have a response to that article, and it needs to be published in the same place.
Right. Now, let me indicate this. I'll play kind of the role of the prosecutor. Now, I understand also early this morning another bloggers group that we are aware of and have mentioned that they were able to contact the publicist for the artist known as Prince.
Yeah.
And I understand, Mr. Allen, that the publicist has issued a statement. And could you just share that with us?
Well, here's why. Like, the Jordan Hochman Group did a lot of research on this, and they came back with some information that shows that Prince went to John Hay Elementary School in 65, Bryant Junior
High.
Let
me just say this now. John Hay's on the north side of Minneapolis.
On the north side. Then he south side, Bryant Junior High School in 1970. Central High School in 1972. North High School in 1973. And he finished up at Minneapolis Central. So it's correct. He did go to North High School. And that's the point that we're trying to make in the ad, because it was about building capacity for Minneapolis North, which is on the chopping block.
And let me confirm some additional information on this, because we've been talking about it since May. And that is, both Mr. Allen and myself attended a interesting meeting the other night, which was certainly not as well publicized as it should have been, and started at 5 o'clock, which meant a lot of community people and who work and also have to be concerned that their children are properly secured at home and et cetera. But they had a meeting at North High School because the redesign team is going to be selected to, quote-unquote, redesign what will be called the new North High School.
Yeah.
And three groups were brought in, and the presentations were very interesting, if you will. But the attendance was not great. I think that I counted about 54 to 55 in attendance. Now, I have to say, Mr. Allen, that this was a crowd smaller than the gathering at Sabathany Community Center in South Minneapolis, hosted by Representatives Hayden and Champion, in which the newly appointed commissioner of education for the state of Minnesota was the speaker, if you will, and had almost 80 citizens in attendance there at Sabathany. I'm just trying to get a feel on why the public schools, Minneapolis Public School District, is having such a problem in getting citizens to turn out.
Well, Mr. Edwards, I would like to explain that to you in
detail. Okay.
As Corey Mitchell so eloquently wrote in his story, that Mr. Allen saw an opportunity to go in. This opportunity for this contract with the schools that I have is for 6 months, until June 2011, because I worked in corporate America for 30 years in communications, marketing, public relations, and advertising, and I don't see a message reaching out like it should the appropriate way.
Okay.
So here's what happened. We all know, Mr. Edwards, you coming from corporate America also, you know that your communications and marketing department can cut your legs off for your corporation, okay?
Absolutely. It
can put you dead in the water.
Absolutely.
Here is the model that I see happening at 807. You have a really great guy, Scott Redd, know him personally. He was in Afro Studies at the University of Minnesota. Stand up, excellent guy. I have nothing negative to say about Scott Redd. But Scott wants to bring these people in to present this model, okay? Somewhere down the line, Scott forgets that there's a communications department at the Minneapolis Public Schools, okay?
Okay.
The Minneapolis Public Schools, at the last minute, sends information to community members who aren't on a payroll, don't make a nickel, who send out emails to their groups. The unfortunate thing is their groups might have 100 or 45 or 45 to 100 people. So the message does not get out. The media list,
it seems like they've gotten gun shy at distributing mass information to the local media. Because if you noticed, Mr. Edwards, only North End News was there. Ms. Margo Ashmore from a newspaper. We were there, but no mainstream, no Corey Mitchell, no Randy Furst, no Larry Oaks, Matt McKinney, nobody. No Channel 5, 11, 4, or 9.
And I have to say, Mr. Allen, and again for our listening audience, and we want to come back with the number, you know, this was the new commissioner of education here in the state of Minnesota. And by the way, let me just editorialize a tad that Governor Mark Dayton has done something kind of interesting. Whereas most governors across the country are cutting education to the bone, Governor Dayton did something very interesting, and he has included a fairly decent increase. And we're a state that has a $6.2 billion deficit. But he has indicated that he intends to increase spending for education. And his commissioner, and by the way, eight legislators showed up at the meeting the other night at Sabathany. And three of those eight were from outstate Minnesota, if you will. And some of them, it was a mix of Democrats and Republicans. They found it important enough to come up to listen to her make a presentation to an affected community, though all of our communities are affected by educational results. Yet, you know, you just jogged my memory. There was no media there, including Mr. Mitchell, no television stations. There was no news coverage and et cetera. And I was just kind of wondering who handles the publicity out of our respective state legislators' offices.
Exactly. That's the point I started on this mission with the Minneapolis Public Schools from the beginning. I said, I'm sitting here, for example, Mr. Edwards, you know, the University of Minnesota had me to come over and teach internet marketing over there, right? They didn't have a nickel, a budget, nothing for advertising, no money to pay me, nothing. I said, fine, that's okay. I'm going to use my internet marketing skills. First class, 90 people. Second class, 90 people. Labs filled without a nickel. So if I can do that without a budget, these guys, this $700 million organization called the Minneapolis Public Schools, should be able to drop a line to Comcast, do a press release, and have that North High Auditorium at standing room only, which is such of an important topic as education of our kids and the redesign of North.
Correct. And redesign, that's, by the way, that contract for our listening audience, that contract is a couple million dollars.
Yes.
And will be given to a firm. The three finalists are all from outside the state of Minnesota, though I have to tell you that one of the particular design teams impressed me with respect to their knowledge, and that would have been the last team that made their presentation the other night.
ISA group, I think it was.
Yeah, that's right.
Very impressive.
Very, very impressive, and are in some real heavy cities. When I say heavy, I'm talking in terms of cities that have significant educational problems, and I sometimes hate using this word, have significant achievement gap issues. You know, that's such a well-used word nowadays. But, you know, let me ask you this, Mr. Allen, and then maybe, you know, we'll probably move on to some other things. What is the vendetta that Mr. Corey Mitchell has against you? Now, does it have to do with the fact that you caught him in a lie about this massive fraud that has taken place with City Inc.?
Yes. Of course, Mr. Edwards, because you sat at the table. Me, you, Mr. Larry Oaks, his editor and boss,
Randy
First,
and who is a senior writer, right.
And I had called him a couple of days ahead of time. I said, did you hear there was a break-in at City Inc., no forced entry, tax information, computers, washers, dryers, et cetera, staplers, stolen?
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, I haven't heard about that.
Yes, he did. Yeah, yeah.
And I sent him the link to it.
Now, right. And he still hasn't written anything.
Yeah. And now you were up there with me, and I said, yeah, well, you know, Independent Business Network On Point and Black Focus broke this story on January 5th. And
yeah, January 5th, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And he also broke some more stuff a little later on about the break-in. After Channel 11 broke it, we followed up on it.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, well, we wrote a story about that. We just didn't publish it. BS! You never wrote a story about it because you didn't know about it until that week when I told you on the phone.
Right, and then he wrote a story about 40 words the next day, next to the obituaries, that an investigation was going on, and allegedly information had been sent to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension to try to get some fingerprints. Any dummy knows that you're not going to get your fingerprints in a facility, in an office in which, you know, 300 and 400 people access it a day. And by the way, none of the equipment, none of the records, but I can tell you once again that the Social Security numbers that were in those files that were stolen are being sold on the streets.
Yeah, exactly. And,
yeah.
And you know, the first sign of Corey Mitchell getting into some origin was when MenPost did this story. MenPost sometimes scratches the Star and Tribune's back. But last year, August 17th, they wanted to announce him, just hit town as July 6th as part of the Star's staff up, the Star Tribune staff up for the weekly sections in Dakota and Washington counties.
Uh-huh.
So he started work on Monday, August 30th, on the education part. So he's been out covering race and rare homicides, and he wrote a story just about rare homicides in Rosemont and exploring the decline of fluent Dakota speakers in the state, whatever that means. And so Mr. Mitchell, in my opinion, I'm just going to allege that he really has no sense of a black consciousness, number one. Number two, he has no history here. And if you don't know where you've been, you're not going to know where you're going. And he does not, you know, he can't get on the phone like I can get on the phone and find out the information. So, Mr. Edwards, I think one of the genesis of his even doing this kind of stuff and writing this stuff, and before I get to the final part, I have a list, Mr. Edwards, of 50 no-bid contracts over $50,000 for the Minneapolis Public Schools.
Yeah, let's explain that to our listening audience, because in the article,
yes,
that in the interview he did 5 weeks before he finally wrote the article and leaving board president Jill Davis feeling that there had been some action of corruption, it came out that that contracts 50,000 and over issued by the Minneapolis Special School District number one must go out for bid. And Mr. Allen, I mean, I'm going to have to say it, Don. I mean, Mr. Allen's contract, as referred to in the story, I guess Mr. Mitchell thought he's going to win a Pulitzer, is for $15,000. And, you know, looking at the work that you did, Mr. Allen, which Mr. Mitchell and the Star went to great lengths to show in the story, I've talked to some associates and friends that I have who are in the business of design and et cetera, and they said, you got to take it to the cleaners because the product that you put out, gloss and et cetera, normally runs about $25,000 to $35,000.
Yeah, and I had people at advertising agencies, Mr. Edwards, that I know, the television commercials alone, they said you should be getting another $40,000 to $50,000 from these guys.
I was told the same thing by folks that I have talked with and known for many, many years in the industry. Yeah, okay.
But you know what was more important to me that Corey Mitchell never put there, and I think I told him? I said the most important thing to me was developing a relationship with the Minneapolis Public Schools. Okay?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Including and asking for and receiving a meeting with the superintendent a number of months ago, which you pointed out that you were not trying to hide anything. But anyways, maybe we've exhausted this enough. Let's throw the phone number out there again,
yes,
because we've got some crime issues here that have emerged in the last 48 hours that I want to touch on, because it ties into the point in time that I served for 5 years on the Justice Department Task Force. So let's give that number again, Mr. Allen.
Sure, please. We invite you to call 877-572-4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288. That is a toll-free number. And Mr. Edwards, go ahead.
Well, I keep that playing. I like that. That's absolutely great. This morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune and yesterday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune reports on the activities of a very effective yet dangerous gang that was white, that has been operating in Minneapolis and had been involved in some pretty violent crimes and et cetera. And it has an affiliation with the Hells Angels motorcycle gang. That's where it goes back to. But the front, according to County Attorney Mike Freeman, Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman, The business that this gang dealing with methamphetamine and other forms of drugs had been using, and this was unique, though some of us have known about it for a number of years, was a bail bonds business. They were bail bondsmen. And, in fact, yesterday in the Hennepin County District Court, they set bail for the elder Gustafson at $750,000. But the judge did something peculiar, and he indicated that Mr. Gustafson's bail bond company could not post his bail, which in some respects is probably the right thing to do when you talk in terms of the requirements by a bail bond firm as it pertains to what assets you have to be able to protect the amount of money that is being posted on your behalf. So that was interesting. But the Gustafson Group has been robbing and laundering money. But what was fascinating that they've been really trying to keep hid here for a long time is that they have been in the foreclosure business. And what they had been doing was getting houses here on the north side of Minneapolis and burning them down. And I can well remember that 2 years ago, at the height of this kind of activity, that city officials were pointing the finger at the black community. And, in fact, a couple of black real estate agents who unfortunately have received some penalties from the government for their activities, it was being alleged that these blacks were involved in arson and et cetera. Now we find out that the Gustafson mob, as they're now being referred to, were front and center, if you will, with respect to that. And the amount of drugs and et cetera that they've been moving was interesting, but what was further interesting was the amount of violence. And I tell you, they are not a very nice group of individuals, okay? But here's one of the things that's real funny about this, that one of their clients, an individual they had a relationship with for quite some time, and the folks know it because folks were trying to figure out why the Minneapolis Police Department got on them like they did. And what it was is that one of their top clients was the brother of our current chief of police, Tim Dolan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And the other, who was a postal employee that was selling drugs right out of postal trucks. It was a big story here about a year and a half ago. And then, you know, the Star Tribune, the same paper we're talking about, was told to tone it down, particularly as we were going into the mayoral election last year.
Mm-hmm.
But what really set this off, and the name actually is right there in front of you. I'm talking in terms of those that like to look in but don't want to say anything. What really got this thing in trouble is that the Gustafsons knocked off a police drug house. And that's what got folks ticked off, because the Gustafson mob had been doing this for a number of years, and they had really been whipping a lot of black drug dealers and et cetera, and violence and et cetera had been commonplace, and there were probably a couple of homicides that had been involved. But they made a mistake and knocked off a police department drug house. Now, I'm going to tell you how this ties in closing for those that will jump up and down and talk about this is just a wild allegation and how dare you. In the article is the name of a Minneapolis police sergeant who allegedly led the investigation, Mr. Allen, Sergeant O'Rourke. We have talked about Sergeant O'Rourke on our television program 2 years ago and the role that he played in passing information to individuals in the gangs, and in the course of doing that caused these individuals to commit acts of homicide, assault, and et cetera. Okay. He also was involved in a situation which ultimately led to a very popular at that time Minneapolis police sergeant by the name of Adams to be actually removed from the district that he was working in as an outgrowth of the party along the 4700 block of Pleasant Avenue South in Minneapolis a couple years ago, where white police officers came together and were partying with underage girls and drugs and things were at play. And they discharged their weapons. And this is basically a white neighborhood, so, you know, it's not something that you do, right?
Yes.
And when the police and investigators arrived, and particularly internal affairs and et cetera, the guys were so out of it. I mean, they were so out of it, you know, physically and et cetera, they left the dope on the table.
Uh-oh.
And what happened, all that dope disappeared within that night. and for anyone that wants to challenge it, in the minutes of the PCRC, Police Community Relations Council, this was discussed as well as a report was made to the Department of Justice, but for whatever reason, nobody wanted to do anything about it.
Yeah, that's really
now,
strange.
Go ahead.
I was saying that you had just, in that commentary, you had talked about Police Chief Dolan's brother.
Yeah.
And it's how funny how, again, I'm like riding the Star and Tribune to the whooping shed because they just stopped talking about it. But you know what,
yeah.
Mr. Edwards? The blue and white cab drivers didn't stop talking about it. Okay.
They sure didn't, did they?
They sure did
Go
not.
Ahead.
Yeah, yeah. They it's really funny, Mr. Edwards, because I have like a 3-year relationship with Blue and White Cab. They're one of my clients. They're great folks, and every now and then I'll get this one cab driver that has a story about picking up either Tim Dolan's brother or his brother's wife, and have a big bag of marijuana, like one of them paper garbage bags.
Okay? Uh-huh.
And they're gonna go over here and drop off. He says, "Hey, man, they pay good, so I'm just driving them around." But, yeah, that went on for like 6 months after everybody was quiet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And let me just say, again, for our audience, domestic, international,
yeah,
this particular story dealing with the chief and the chief's brother, the Postal Authority, the same one that was vigorous in dealing with the little dog, if you will, and the African-American woman.
We have a call, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, let's get it. Let's take it. Let's see what it is.
You're live on the air.
Yeah, why do you continue to talk about police officers? They do an outstanding job for our communities.
Yeah.
Well, I'm quite sure they do, and there's a lot more sympathy, sir, for them since Governor Scott Walker over in Wisconsin called them a bunch of terrorists, which probably wasn't too wise on his part. And, you know, they're a part of public servants and et cetera, and we certainly praise those that are doing their job and doing the right thing. But, you know, I'm not going to let you, sir, or anyone else push us away from the facts and the truth. As we said before, the incident that we talk about along the 4700 block of Pleasant Avenue South in Minneapolis a couple years ago. In fact, the two officers that fired their weapons out there, and again, this is a story that Star Tribune really didn't explore, they were, to our caller, they not only were disciplined and discharged from the department, but they had to do a little time in the workhouse.
Yeah, well, you know, same goes like this. Terrorists were the ones that killed Officer Huff.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you raised that question, sir. Seems like you may know a little bit about it. First of all, the people that actually killed Officer Huff here almost 20 years ago are not the people who are currently in jail. And there are there are a number of us who are very much involved in these kinds of investigation examinations know that the first group of African Americans rounded up the night after and a couple days after Jerry Hoff was shot down in the chicken shack were the actual gunmen, but some of them were involved in covert operations that dealt with crime and drugs in the African American community. And some way or another, you know, they just kind of disappeared. Don't you remember? Well, maybe you don't, sir.
Well, yo,
but don't you remember when the police informant was found shot in the alley next to the garage right there on 31st, right off of 4th? You remember that?
Yeah,
you remember that murder?
Thugs. They're all thugs.
They're all thugs. You mean you're talking about the police?
Oh, no, the black gangsters that killed them.
There's no black
gangsters. But you see, the police depend upon those kinds of individuals to make them look good, sir.
Well,
and that's an example. That's what led to the demise of the Gustafsons, because apparently as part of a plea bargain, the chief brother decided to throw some folks under the bus. But they needed to wait basically 7 or 8 months before they made the arrest because they needed to protect their informants. Oh, sir, you're talking to the wrong group of individuals.
Yeah, well, we all need to come together as people of colors and white community. And, you know, sir, we just have to back our mayor and chief here. You know, they're having
back
jobs.
Back our who, sir?
Our mayor and chief.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I'm quite sure the citizens back him. The chief is now serving his second term. The mayor is serving his third. And, oops, But, you know, sir, you must have missed our program of last week because I'll be doggone. Mr. Allen and I talked about and documented that one of the reasons that Minneapolis lost the opportunity to hold the Democratic National Convention here next year was because we have been identified officially by documentation as the 10th most violent city, an unsafe city in America. And
yeah,
I'm puzzled by that.
Because of the thugs in the communities.
Well, no, no, sir. I don't go in that direction for this reason. I can well remember doing the campaign, the mayoral campaign of 2009. Maybe you were here with us then or from wherever you're at because it looks like you're down in Tennessee or something. But anyways, we were all being told by the Star Tribune that this was the safest city in the free world. And, in fact, remember that year allegedly only had 19 homicides and that Mayor R.T. Ryback was doing the greatest job in the free world. Now, in the article yesterday morning in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Council President Barb Johnson, who the Gustafsons live in her ward and are basically operating in that ward, called them an active group of terrorists who have terrorized particularly the city of Minneapolis and North Minneapolis for years. Now, I'm puzzled. If the Gustafsons and that whole crew have been terrorizing the city, sticking up drug dealers, beating people, sometimes, in fact, one of the things these guys like to do is make you strip naked, and then they beat you and do things to parts of your body. You kind of know what I'm saying. They're about a bit about.
Yeah, this guy knows.
And so I can't. I'm having difficulty buying into what you're saying about how well things are going because it appears things go well according to the white media in our
city.
Well,
what are you and your people doing for the communities?
Now, when you say your people, you're talking about my relatives or what you're talking about?
African Americans.
Oh, African Americans. Well, African Americans
have received millions and millions of dollars over the years to deal with your people. You haven't done that.
Well, let me tell you, no, that's not. Well, I can't speak for those that get that money, but you asked me a question, what are my people doing? Those who are sincere, such as the mother of Quincy Smith, a young man brutally murdered by the police in the streets of Minneapolis, tasered to death, is doing everything she could, including she has just filed a lawsuit in the federal court. In the death of her son. Now, I can't help it if the leaders in my city, see, I'm not a part of the leadership groups or any of that, I can't help it that they chose not to support Miss Betty Smith and her family during their time of pain and trials and tribulations. I you know, I can't speak to that. Here's what will happen. Mr. Allen and I will try to see if we can get some of the leadership. Would you agree to this, Mr. Allen, some of the leadership of our African American community, maybe like the Council on Black Minnesota, people like that. And we'd like to, you know, have them come on the air and we will probably set aside maybe a half hour here on Point.
Yeah.
And open the phone lines for people such as yourself, sir, and others from both locally and around the country to call and ask them the question you just asked me.
Yeah, well, that's
because they're the ones getting paid.
Yeah,
that's great. And I challenge them right now, I know they're listening. They're not calling in, obviously, but I challenge them right now to call in and discuss the problem in the black community.
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to try to do that. Sir, we appreciate your call.
Yeah,
okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I would like
Mr. Allen, what'd you say?
I wanted to interject something to that caller because he called last week to ask me about my contract with the school district, and I just feel it's fair to call him and find out where he's calling from.
Yes. My sense is he won't answer, but go ahead.
Sheraton Bloomington Hotel, Minneapolis South.
He's calling the Sheraton Bloomington Hotel in Minneapolis.
It will be our pleasure to assist you. To expedite your call, please listen.
He called from a trunk line at the Sheraton Hotel in Bloomington.
Wow.
Yeah.
He called from a trunk line. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, hopefully this person, he's kind of been a watchtower, if you will. He's called four or five times, we know, over the since May, and he's raised some questions to us, and he's raised questions about leadership, except I'm not sure that he has the total history of what's really going on around here, but I think that, you know, at the point that some of the leaders agree that they'll call in, as others have done here on Point, because mm-hmm. we seem to be the only entity that's really doing and dealing with it, though I understand that KFAI and KFAI has been trying to do some things. Camel J just doesn't seem to have the energy. I'll use that word. Doesn't seem the inclination to have these kinds of programs. We used to have these kinds of programs all the time when we were in control of KMOJ many years ago. I used to require, and I think you remember that, Mr. Allen, I used to require X amount of hours a week for public broadcasting, town hall forums, call-ins, and et cetera. But I guess things are so great right now here in our city that we don't need to do that anymore. We don't need to allow African-Americans access to anything but hearing the music.
Exactly. That's all they need. Give them their music. They'll be okay.
That's right. Well, boom, 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 boom. Yes, 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 yes. Well, go ahead.
Well, we have we have 30 minutes remaining, 34 minutes to be exact. And the call-in number is 877-572-4288. Don Allen and Mr. Ron Edwards broadcasting live from the McIntosh Studios in downtown Minneapolis, where visibility is limited right now out the windows. And so we want people to call in and join this conversation. But Mr. Edwards, more importantly, and moving on here, we have some trouble with the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights and the city of Minneapolis trying to cover up, deny, obstruct, and keep silence a letter from the Honorable Professor Dr. Sam Myers, who is the chair of the Roy Wilkins Center for Human Relations and Social Justice, who wrote a rebuttal on the 2010 Minneapolis Disparity Report. What are you doing?
So let's talk about that, and let's see if we can get some calls in on that from observers. Now, give me your take, Mr. Allen, on that, on the letter.
You know, Mr. Edwards, I had known that I met Mr. Myers at an event that Springboard Community Development Department in Development Corporation was having, where they had they flew in some professionals that talked about the DDE program. Well, Professor Myers, Mr. Myers, Dr. Myers was there to add his contribution because he understands this clearly. He's read it backwards and forth and studied the whole race, class, status, business, unemployment. I mean, he knows everything. He's a brainiac. Okay. So he had told me back then that, you know, I'm going to be writing a rebuttal to the 2010 Minneapolis Disparity Report, or professionally called the State of Minority and Women-Owned Business Enterprise Evidence for Minneapolis.
Right.
And so I was just, one day I was talking with a colleague. I says, you know, did Dr. Myers ever write the letter? He says, well, you need to call over to his assistant.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the time out. I called over there, and the great assistant says, well, yes, he did write a letter. And so I sent Dr. Myers an email asking him to let me publish his letter because I haven't seen it. And then he wrote me back in the email and says, how did you find out that I even wrote a letter?
Okay.
Said, well, remember we had this conversation. You said you were going to do it, and you usually, you know, you've done it. So can I have it?
Mm-hmm.
And in less than 5 minutes, Mr. Edwards, I had the letter right in my hands. And it's to me, it says garbage in, garbage out. The numbers aren't clear. And this information they got for the disparity report is no good. We wasted $500,000 of taxpayer money. Maybe Star Tribune should write about that. And it says in point four in his letter, no statistical effort is made to determine whether the discrimination against white male-owned firms via existing race-conscious programs. This opens up the city to a charge that it has not narrowly tailored its programs. And
absolutely.
And he has 5 points there that people need to realize and read, because later this week, the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, I guess, is having some meeting at City Hall. Isn't it, Mr. Edwards, with the Committee of the Whole or the Public Safety?
No. Let's be absolutely clear. So that what has happened is that in November of last year, we will give the proper narrative. In November of last year, the Committee of the Whole, which is the Minneapolis City Council, but they act as the Committee of the Whole for purposes of their business, and also it's allegedly supposed to be a point in time when citizens can speak. Citizens cannot speak during regular council meetings, which are held every Friday and have been for the last 80 years. What happened is that the Minneapolis City Council announced that the Committee of the Whole would be the body that would entertain public information, public testimony, most importantly, public testimony on the disparity report that Dr. Myers makes reference to in his letter, which, by the way, the letter doesn't have a date on it, but I assume it's been in the last number of days. The date was initially given as February 24th. By Velma Coifel, the executive director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department. We have been reporting here on Point for the last four of the last six programs that a sudden decision was made. First, a decision was made that the public hearing could not be held on the 24th of February. But to our surprise, we found out that the date of March 2nd had been decided upon before the Public Safety Committee, chaired by Council Member Don Samuels, Democrat 5th Ward. By the way, when you look at the purpose and mission statement of the Public Safety Committee, it does not say anything in terms of disparity studies or economic development issues. That's a fact. The Public Safety Committee looks at fire, police, and public health, if you will. And so consequently, Velma Coifel has been meeting with members of the Chamber of Commerce, kind of sound like Wisconsin, and we first reported in our program of the third Saturday of January, for those that like to go back on demand, that we had visited with the Minority Contractors Association in a meeting at the UROC facility, their monthly January meeting. I don't think they've even had a meeting in February. And that the leadership of the organization told me directly upon inquiry in that meeting, there were 19 people present, that they, in fact, had turned over the responsibility to respond to Dr. Myers, which that's fine, that's great. I asked if the Minority Contractors Association, you and I, in fact, just a couple weeks before had attended, a week before had attended their gala affair at one of the big downtown hotels. Okay,
yeah.
Right? Remember that?
I remember. I was there. Yeah.
And so what happened was is that everybody was kind of waiting on Dr. Myers. Now, Dr. Myers is correct, but we've been saying this for a long time.
Yes.
That the information is tainted. It's in fact, it's tainted almost in a criminal manner. And so, I mean, I can buy that. He's right about that. It's no accident that there was no part of the report that he reviewed that talked about the possibility of reverse discrimination, because that's what you're talking about. But again, Mr. Allen, we were there. Individuals affiliated with this program. We were there when the presentation was made in November and then again in December. Dr. Wainwright, who was the principal person, along with Dr. Colette Hoyt of Chicago, a eminent and well-respected black attorney and expert in the field of diversity and et cetera, both said, if there are any questions that you have or if you need any assistance in deciphering information that we are concerned about that came from you, we'd be very happy to come back. They made that offer. At this hour, and just a couple days away from the public hearing, Velma Coifel never reached out to Colette Hoyt, Ms. Hoyt of Chicago, the attorney, and the person who, in fact, insisted that in the recommendations that were also handed to the City Council on the 22nd of October, 2010, that she would not sign off on the report if it, in fact, was not absolutely and unequivocally clarified that the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department and the City of Minneapolis and the Office of the Mayor, by extension, had falsified documents, Mr. Allen, to the United States government and to other statutory entities with respect to the figures, the numbers, and et cetera.
Mr. Edwards, the phone
go ahead.
The phone lines just lit up.
Let's get it. Let's do it.
You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. First, I have to say I'll preface my comments, and I have quite a few. I joined a little late, but I've been jotting down some notes, and I do have quite a few comments. And I just want to preface what I'm going to say is that I do tend to lean a little right of center. So First, I want to tackle the issue of the dog. I am a young African American gentleman, and I have a dog. I have a what's called you may not have heard this term or know, but she's a German Shepherd, and she's a Schutzen dog, which means that I speak to her in both German and in English.
Oh,
like a police dog.
I'm sorry.
Like a police dog.
Yes, yes, she is. She's a service canine. She's all of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I have to say that while I am empathetic with the young lady's situation, you have to know better. You cannot send a dog by USPS, UPS, FedEx. You can't do that.
Agreed, sir. We clarified that at the top. I mean,
right.
We are extremely sensitive, but you're correct, yes.
Right.
Our issue, though, was the child.
Right, exactly. And I do agree that, you know, and I hope something was done for the child's birthday. I agree with that wholeheartedly and 100%.
Okay.
Now, your last caller, the gentleman that's mentioned about the police department and, you know, thugs and all of that, I have to say, you know, although I do lean right of center, I have to say shame on you. If you are going to make those comments, let them know who you are and where you are.
Okay.
Be a man about that. So I have to say shame on him.
Okay?
Okay. Your voices will be challenged, gentlemen. And, again, although I do lean the way I lean, we do need you in the community to speak your voices. We need that.
Okay.
I would hope one day that you get a syndicated show because that's where you need to be. Now, I joined a little late, and I hope you did touch on Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin.
About 35 minutes ago. We talked in terms of his conduct. We talked in terms of the tapes and his statements in which he – Mr. Allen and I concentrated on, sir, was that we were absolutely taken back in the conversation with the blogger associate that we are all bloggers or associates in many respects out of Buffalo, who elicited from the good governor the fact that he was prepared to put operatives into the crowd to create mayhem and possible bloodshed, sir. But what are your observations? I mean, you're saying to us you're a little bit left of right, I mean, or right of left, or right of center. What is your thinking about what Governor Walker is doing up here in Wisconsin?
Well, again, I'm sure just like you gentlemen, I do a lot of research, and while you have been talking, I've just kind of pulled up the office of the governor, Scott Walker, in Wisconsin. I think that the protesters, that's unneeded energy. If the governor is trying to create jobs, and just in looking at his website, and I know it seems a little far off, 2015, but he's talking about creating 250,000 new jobs in Wisconsin, and we know how small Wisconsin is. And I'm from Minnesota. I'm from St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just
you live there now, sir?
Now I live in Los Angeles.
You're a California conservative. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sir.
So I think it is a waste of energy that we are trying to, I don't want to say undermine, but I do want to say undermine what the governor is trying to do in Wisconsin. Of course, when you make cuts, not everyone is going to be happy. But if you're trying to do that for the betterment of your state, I think that we have to take a closer look at it and wait to see exactly what he's going to do instead of trying to do a preemptive attack before you even know what this gentleman is going to do.
You're talking about the governor?
The governor. Exactly.
Well, sir, let me just say that's an interesting point of debate that we would expect from the right, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we definitely know that he's going to do, and it's the reason that thousands and thousands of people for, what are we now, day 13, 14? This is going on longer than the whole situation in Cairo.
One thing
we do know that he's going to do is that he is going to eliminate collective bargaining. I mean, he has made that clear, I disagree with some of my colleagues on the left that it doesn't have anything to do with jobs. Collective bargaining has all the world to do with jobs. It has a lot to do with meaningful income. And let me just say this to you, sir. You had said you're an African-American, young African-American.
Right.
The one thing that we African-Americans know, if we don't know anything else, and maybe it would have helped if there had been something called collective bargaining back in 1820, is that we know what it is to work for free.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's called slavery, okay? And so as an African-American, black Negro, and I'm an older African-American. I come out of a period when we were referred to as Negroes, okay? But, sir, I have to say to you, and I like your observation on this, and I think this is an excellent kind of challenge to us. I'll repeat it again. We know what it is to work for free, okay?
Right.
And what the governor is proposing, and of course, a man who his chief advisors are the Koch brothers, who, if I'm not mistaken, sir, I know my geography pretty good. You're out there in Los Angeles, and to the
right.
east of you is a beautiful community called, like, the desert, Palm Springs, and all that.
Exactly, Palm
and
Desert.
And I understand
and
that my...
Scott Koch does have a residence there. Now, I remember the Koch, and let me digress. And again, I do respectfully, I understand what you're saying. However, my grandfather owned a rubbish company, and
okay.
It has grown now. It's in its fourth generation now. And I remember the Koch brothers. We used to have to go to Pine Bend Landfill, and I remember seeing
down
the
here
Koch
towards
brothers.
Hastings, Minnesota. Yes, you knew North.
Actually,
okay.
actually, it was South St. Paul. Actually,
uh-huh.
South St. Paul near the old stockyards.
Okay.
However, I remember when the Koch brothers first started. I remember when we used to see their trucks, and it was, you know, it is the American way that we have to.
You mean it's the American way to drop to work for free? I'm sorry.
No,
sir. I mean, I'm just trying
not,
to get
it's
a
not,
sense.
No, and respectfully, Mr. Edwards, it's not working for free because, I mean, we're in 2011.
Uh-huh.
If nobody is working for free. So I think that's an unfair statement. I think that what we have to do, again, is we have to look at the segment that we're working in. And if you're working in a service industry, that is what your pay scale is. If you're in technology, that is what your pay scale is. If you're in marketing, that is what your pay scale is. So we have to, again, I know we, and sometimes you have to rely on the state or the government to help you out, but I think, again, you have to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and say, you know what, I want more, I want better, and it's never too late.
Well,
so,
let me ask you this question, sir. I mm-hmm. Boy, that's interesting.
And
pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Do you think at some point, though, that we're entitled to that 40 acres and a mule?
I can't. That,
no,
that
I mean, sir, really. I mean, because we're talking
well,
about
I
something
we,
that was a almost a constitutional directive in 1863.
Yeah. I will say
we
yes.
Still haven't
was
got
a
there. We're kind of like the Palestinians in the Middle East. Now, that's the real Middle East, who
well,
still
yeah.
are waiting for their state. Okay. But let me go back to your statement to us, sir, about Governor Scott Walker.
Right.
You said we weren't giving him a chance. Of course, we here on Point are journalists. It's our responsibility to analyze and report the news. Now, everyone agrees that this governor campaigned on a platform of jobs, and you cited a figure that by 2015 he said he's going to have 250,000 new jobs in Wisconsin. And Wisconsin, by the way, is about 600,000 larger than Minnesota.
Okay.
The governor said he was campaigning on jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The governor doesn't have anything in his current budget that talks about jobs and revitalization, but he talks quite a bit about cutting programs essential to social services and et cetera. But the thing that has mobilized and motivated organized labor, and I'm sure, sir, you're probably not that necessarily that big on organized labor, has been the collective bargaining. Now, let me just give you this example, sir, because it frustrates us all. We, Mr. Allen and myself, were talking before you called from, is it California?
Yes.
Yes. That we have a report here that is going to be sanitized, there's no doubt about it, that says, and I think it goes kind of contrary to you and other conservatives who talk in terms of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, et cetera. We have a situation here in your home, former hometown, sir,
mm-hmm.
in which African Americans, first and foremost, Asians, Hispanics, and Native Americans, in kind of reverse order,
mm-hmm.
are paid oftentimes 40% less of the standard compensation for work in the area of construction and et cetera. African Americans here are paid 43% less than their white counterparts. Okay.
With more experience in everything. So
yeah. Now in some of the cases that we've researched here and working closely with the National Research Institute in out there in your part of the world, in California, we have determined this to be a most egregious kind of situation, okay? Now, I'm just trying to get a feel from you, sir, as a mm-hmm. young kind of conservative African-American
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who talks in terms of pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps, if you will,
right.
etc. What is it that we need to do to deal with a greater degree of equality and equity and et cetera in this battle? Because, see, the other thing that happens is that and you sound like a younger man, if you will, clearly,
yeah,
not in the age group of either myself or Mr. Allen per se, but particularly not in my age group.
I'm 42.
Oh, well,
now,
you're a young fellow. Okay.
Right.
You're 42 years old. Now, let me say this, sir.
Okay, I will.
We have a situation here where there is now 30% unemployment amongst young African Americans in the age category of 19 to 30.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And it's killing us as a community. Now, let me just ask this. How are you tackling that out there in Southern California?
Our governor, Governor Brown, of course. Yeah, and of course he's a Democrat, but he has some great ideas on how to tackle the unemployment. He is cutting. A deficit isn't all that bad. When we cut, it's not all that bad. Going back to your point about unions, and I know you have other callers, so I'll be quick.
No, we've got time here, sir.
Okay, going back to your point about unions, I have several points, but to your point about the unions, if we cut a union, that money that we had to pay those union dues for, that goes into our pocket. That goes into now our pocket, where the union bosses aren't making the six-figure salaries, sitting up and just passing down a directive saying, don't you do this, don't you do that, don't you do this, or we're going to pick it. My office is downtown Los Angeles in the U.S. Bank building. Inevitably, I always walk by somebody picketing. It's unproductive.
Shouldn't an American right, a right of passage?
Well, no, it is the American right. No, it is. That is. I'm not saying that at all.
Okay.
However, what I am saying is that, you know, our money going to the unions, I think it's ridiculous. I am not for
union. Let me ask you this, sir. Because we probably, Mr. Allen, we're down probably to about 12 minutes. Sir, let me ask you and your conservative group or host, if you will, why don't we talk, and I'm looking at Governor Christie out in New Jersey, who is,
mm-hmm.
you know, putting his presidential run. We're going to have 50 Republicans. I imagine you Republicans will have a lot of people trying to contend to oust this president. But what do you do and what do you say to state governments that for years lied and never paid into the pension funds as a part of their legal responsibility for contributions? New Jersey and your own California, by the way, sir, are two
right.
significant examples of state
mm-hmm.
government not paying into the pension plans.
Right.
While the workers, the very people that you're talking about, sir, mm-hmm. carried out their responsibility. In fact, in most cases, Mr. Allen, you and I know, they didn't have a choice, so it was coming out of their check. Now, most workers, including those of yours out
yeah.
there in California, pay anywhere from 6 to 8.5% into the pension fund, right?
Correct.
Now,
actually, it's a little higher, but yeah, you're right.
Oh, a little higher. Okay. Now, mm-hmm. tell me, sir. Just tell me in the last couple of minutes we have here, what? Let's just say I'm a old union guy. You know, I'm old enough. I'm older than both you and my co-host, Mr. Allen. And I know how hard organized labor worked to do what they did. I know how hard we as African Americans worked to get into the unions. But I'm a union worker. I'm now in my 30th year, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting ready to retire. You know, I want to see my grandchildren and hang out with my kids and my grandchildren and et cetera and spend my leisure days. And what happens, human resources tells me, said, well, look, Ron, here's the problem. The government has missed a number of significant points in time where they didn't match. See, that
mm-hmm.
key word was match. Is that correct, sir?
Correct. Yeah, match right. your contribution.
That's my card. And they didn't match my contribution. And so it's mm-hmm. kind of like if I had a K-501 or 504, whatever. What's happened is that the money that I thought was there for my retirement, in those 30 mm-hmm. years that I put in, those right. early mornings when I got up, mm-hmm. if you will, and under mm-hmm. all conditions, made it to my job. That's the reason I'm still there for 30 years. Human resources tells me, Ron, we're sorry, but mm-hmm. it's not there. You're going to have to work another 10 years. And, in fact, we're getting ready to kick your retirement up to 70, maybe even 72 or 73.
Right.
Well, how should I feel? What should I tell my colleagues, and what should I tell my kids?
Well, first of all, I think that it is your responsibility every month. Like I do, every month I look at my 401k. I think about the future. I have a father, I have children, mother. I want to be able to take care of them.
Okay.
And if every month I don't look at my 401k and make sure that my investments and I am investing correctly, I cannot complain when I turn 65 or whenever I get ready to retire, and now automatically say, "Oops,
sorry,
what am I going to do?"
Let me just cut in. It's beyond oops. We have too much documentation. Mr. Mm-hmm. Allen, Independent News Business Network, the National Research mm-hmm. Center, my own experience in life. We have too much history. I can name too many people, sir, mm-hmm. That have, in fact, gone into human resources or the benefits office and actually been given false documents. And, in fact, that's one of the controversies in California, New Jersey, Wisconsin, actually been given documents that said that that your match was being put in and that the state's match was being put in.
Well, in that case, I mean, that's a clear-cut case. I mean, I think that is very rare, but I think that's a clear-cut
sir,
case where you
please,
go to the
please,
Department
sir.
Of Justice and you say this is criminal activity, that they lie. So that's clear-cut. That's two separate arguments that you're making.
If I could just interject here,
Mr.
Real
Hammond,
quick.
Go right ahead.
Yeah. Going to the government, about the government, hasn't been successful to this day.
Okay, well, and you don't have to go to the government, Mr. Allen. What
yeah.
you could do are there are plenty of private attorneys that would love, I mean, they would salivate for that case. So, again,
Is that right, sir?
Oh,
well, what
they
happens,
salivate
though,
if
my law firm, if my law firm has some significant contracts with entities like the Koch brothers or friends of the Koch brothers, and all of a sudden I get a call that tells me that the case can't be handled? Or let me ask you this, sir. Can I be guaranteed that there's no conflict of interest with respect to the lawyers that I retain?
Well, again,
I hate to cut you off. Let me tell you the genesis for that. Anytime I'm powerful enough
yeah.
in this country to be able to summon two members, Scalise and Thomas,
mm-hmm.
to my private estate. See, you just named, sir, the fact that one of the Kochs has a lovely home out there in the desert.
Yeah,
any time that I can summon mm-hmm. two justices of the United States Supreme Court
right.
to come to a planning meeting
mm-hmm.
to sit with me and to hear me as the overlord, notice the word, sir, that I use, as the overlord,
mm-hmm.
indicate the direction that I think the court and this country should be going in,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, sir, that as an African-American, particularly as an African-American, be
right.
it myself or Mr. Allen or even you, sir, that we really stand a chance. I'd like for you to give some thought to that, and at least
okay.
if you get a chance over the next couple of weeks, give us a call back.
Yeah, certainly.
Kind of let us know your thinking. And also, could you do this for us?
Yes.
Could you give us what kind of discussion is going on in California
mm-hmm.
about the revelation that at least two Supreme Court justices seem to be on the payroll. Oops.
Yeah. And, Mr. Edwards, we have another caller on the air.
All right, sir, we want to thank you from out of California.
Yeah, thank you.
Is he gone? Okay. Wow, yeah. Jesus, he's conservative. What do you got? Go ahead.
Go ahead, caller, you're live on the air. And thanks for holding. Hello?
Who's that?
You're on.
Hello?
Yes, we hear you. You're on, sir. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. What's happening, brothers? On point. Yeah, you guys are doing big-time things over here. Hey, you know, the caller from California, it's real interesting. Just left California, actually doing some on-location stuff there. But
okay.
the U.S. Bank, ironically enough, where his offices are right by the L.A. County Jail and also Skid Row. So, you know, when he said that he, you know, walks by protesters every day, I'm very familiar with the area. And he also walks by a legion of homeless black men every day as well. And, you know, the county jail is there, too. So
go ahead, my brother.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, that was a good discussion. I just want to also put in there with the Koch brothers. They had a report on them and the influence that they're having in the Wisconsin governor.
Protest and et cetera. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Now, dig this. Now, his father was a member of the John Birch Society. Yeah, and I thought that was a real interesting connection because, you know, I did kind of understand what the caller was saying as far as, you know, the need to make cuts and things of that nature. With the union, sometimes if you look at things like, for example, the teachers union and things of that nature, they do kind of tend to stop maybe some progress happening. But you also got to flip that coin, too, and say, you know, at least for black folks, you know, Dr. King was killed when he was leading a march for
sanitation workers.
In Memphis, Tennessee.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, it's a multiple kind of fabric of conversation, especially for black folks in America as it pertains to stuff like that. So I think the deal in Wisconsin is definitely going to be interesting. It's also interesting where the money's coming from with that, and a lot of people can be bamboozled to jump on one train or another. But, you know, I know I plan specifically to get out there to Madison to cover it myself, but I just caught up with y'all the last 40 minutes here, and I just wanted to say a good exchange of information once again, and big shout-out to my man in California, and make sure you stop by and say hello to them brothers on Skid Row next time you go to work.
All right?
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you, sir.
Do we have one more call? Go ahead, caller. You're live on the air.
Yeah, the caller that called before, two callers ago, how dare him? He sounds like a Negro Michael Steele, secret Tea Party Republican member.
Wow.
We get another call from the same guy out at the Marriott Hotel in Bloomington. I'd like to thank him for that call.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
In fact, the gentleman from California, you know, he may be a you know, when I said he was a Republican, he didn't refute it. So he may be a part of that conservative Michael Steele kind of group.
Yeah. Why not?
But
why not?
The caller before this last call kind of revealed some things when he talked in terms of where the gentleman's big corporate office was. Whoops.
Yeah.
And we've all been in L.A. enough to know that, yeah, that's absolutely correct. Fascinating. You know, by the way, Ms. Allen, one of the things, and I've noticed this, and I've had some complaints rendered to us, folks still get confused about the time that we're on. I know you changed it, put it up, because we'll, you know, in a couple of weeks we'll be going back to the time with respect to daylight saving time. But could you just indicate again, we're on from 4
we're
to 5:30 Central Standard Time.
Central Standard Time, 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time until daylight savings, and then we'll move it up to 5 to 6:30. So, every week it hasn't changed. We're on every Saturday at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. You can call. And we have another caller, by the way, Mr. Edwards.
We got enough time. Get him in.
Yes. Hi, caller. You're live on the air with On Point.
Hi. This is Mustafa calling from Minneapolis.
Hey, Mustafa.
I just want to make it sure that I want to bring your attention and your listeners what's going on in Libya and the effect it's having other black African immigrants who are being killed and leeched on the streets because Libyans think they are mercenaries for Gaddafi, and that's nobody talking about that. And I would appreciate if you can
Mustafa, we in fact did.
Yes.
At the very top of the hour, we dedicated about 17 minutes to the situation in Libya, and in fact, we talked about the African mercenary situation. But we appreciate you indicating the importance of discussing that, because you're right. The American or Western press is definitely not dealing with what's happening right now, the carnage that's going on.
Yeah, and we have under a minute left, Mr. Edwards, and I'm pretty sure we can get back to Mustafa here. I have his phone number right here.
Okay.
Andy.
Okay.
I will actually follow up with him. But we'd like to thank everyone for listening this week to On Point, broadcasting live from downtown Minneapolis in the McIntosh Studios. I'd like to thank my co-host, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, who also has a TV show
on the Minneapolis Television Network. For those of you that are in Minneapolis proper, tune to Channel 17 at 5 p.m. for Black Focus. And Mr. Edwards, what is your show tomorrow?
We're talking in terms of what's going on in Africa, if you will, in Libya. But we'll also be talking in terms of some of the issues that have been taking place here. And we continue to renew the in-depth discussion on the death of Quincy Smith and factors that are being hid from the general public by the Minneapolis Star Tribune, your favorite paper, Don.
Yeah, it is my favorite paper. I mean, use it for instance, just put in the fireplace today. Anyway, we'd like to thank everyone for listening. And with that, you know, this is our last Saturday broadcasting in Black History Month. But let's make every day a Black History Month. Don't forget to spend some money in the black business for the rest of the year. Let's grow and do this. Thank you, Mr. Edwards.
Thank you.